The Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into a really foundational book, one that shaped a lot of thinking on self-improvement and leadership. Stephen Covey's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yeah, it's such an interesting one because it really hits on this big frustration so many people feel today. You know the feeling, right?
Oh, yeah.
People work hard, they achieve things, maybe get the promotion, hit the targets. But inside, they feel kind of empty or just totally overwhelmed, maybe disconnected.
Like you're running faster and faster and not actually getting anywhere meaningful. Yeah. And we keep reaching for those like quick fixes, productivity apps, communication tricks.
Right, those little hacks. Mm. But the underlying thing doesn't change. Mm. And that's exactly where Covey comes in. His whole point is, look, we've been focusing on the wrong stuff. We're chasing what he called the personality ethic, you know, image, skills, techniques, quick wins.
Surface level things.
Exactly. But he says true effectiveness, the kind that lasts, well, that's an inside out job. It has to start deeper with your character, your integrity. That's the character ethic.
So our plan today is really to unpack that inside out idea. We want to look at what the 7 habits are, sure, but also why you need to approach them in order, kind of step by step, to get to that genuine effectiveness.
So maybe let's start with the man himself, Stephen R. Covey. Who was he?
Well, Stephen Covey, he lived from 1932 to 2012. Wasn't just some, you know, motivational speaker. He had serious credentials, an MBA from Harvard, a doctorate from BYU.
Right.
But what gave him real clout, I think, was his reach. He co-founded Franklin Covey. That company trained leaders in something like 90% of the Fortune 100 companies. So he was seeing effectiveness or ineffectiveness up close at the highest levels.
Yeah, but what makes his view really unique, I think, isn't just the consulting, it's the history. Before writing 7 Habits, he actually dug into over 200 years of success literature in America.
Wow, 2 centuries of advice books. Yeah. What did he even find looking back that far?
He found this massive shift, a really critical one. For the first, say, 150 years, the advice was all about the character ethic. Things like integrity, humility, patience, fairness, real foundational virtues.
Okay.
Then, somewhere around the early 20th century, it flips. Suddenly, it's all about the personality ethic, public image, communication skills, positive thinking techniques, how to influence people quickly.
Ah, so we started looking for the shortcuts, the charisma hacks, the ways to look trustworthy instead of actually being trustworthy through character.
Exactly. And Covey basically says that's why so many successful people feel hollow. We're prioritizing the outside over the inside. So the whole book is really a call to get back to principles, to flip that focus back inside out.
Okay, so that leads us to the book itself. It's not just a list of habits, is it? He's trying to change how you even see things.
Totally. He starts with this idea of paradigms, how you see the world. He uses that classic visual puzzle, you know, the one that can be an old woman or a young woman.
Right, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. And his point is simple. 2 people can see the exact same thing and see totally different realities. Often, the way we see the problem is the problem. So real change needs a paradigm shift first.
And these shifts, they need to be grounded in something solid. He calls them principles.
Like lighthouses, he says. Unchanging natural laws, fairness, integrity, honesty. You can't really break them. You just kind of break yourself against them if you ignore them.
Makes sense.
So once you start aligning your own maps with these lighthouses, you begin this journey. He calls it the maturity continuum. It's got 3 stages.
Okay, what are they?
First is dependence. That's the you stage. You need to help me. Or you're the reason I failed. It's relying on others.
Like a child, basically.
Pretty much. Then comes independence. This is the I stage. I can do it. I am responsible for myself. I'm self-reliant. And honestly, a lot of modern self-help kind of stops here.
Right. Independence feels like the goal sometimes.
But Covey says the highest level, the real aim, is interdependence. That's the we stage. We can do it together. We can cooperate, combine our strengths. The best things happen here. But, and this is key, you can't leapfrog. You have to achieve independence first before you can be truly interdependent.
Ah, okay. And the habits fit into this somehow.
Perfectly. Habits 1, 2, and 3 are what he calls the private victory. They move you from dependence to independence, self-mastery.
Got it.
Then habits 4, 5, and 6 are the public victory. They move you into interdependence, teamwork, cooperation, communication.
And habit 7?
Ah, habit 7 is the engine that keeps it all going. It's about renewal. sharpening the saw, as he calls it.
Okay, let's break down that private victory first. It starts with habit one. Be proactive.
Yeah, this is the absolute foundation. It's the idea that fundamentally you are responsible for your life. He has this amazing line. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response.
Meaning, stuff happens to us, but we get to choose how we react. Our attitude, our actions.
Exactly. You're the driver, not the passenger reacting to bumps in the road. And the practical tool here is understanding your circle of influence versus your circle of concern.
Explain that a bit.
Well, reactive people pour all their energy into their circle of concern, things they can't really control, like, you know, the economy, politics, what other people are doing. They complain a lot. Proactive people, they focus their energy squarely on their circle of influence, things they can do something about. Their skills, their work ethic, their attitude, their choices.
And the cool part is?
The cool part is when you consistently work on your circle of influence, it actually starts to expand. You gain more control, more influence. Worrying about the circle of concern just shrinks it.
Right. It empowers you instead of making you feel like a victim.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're proactive. You're responsible. Where do you go from there?
You need a destination. That's habit two, begin with the end in mind.
Okay, sounds strategic.
It is. It's based on the idea that everything is created twice. First mentally, then physically. Like building a house, you need the blueprint before you start laying bricks.
So you need a blueprint for your life.
Pretty much. And how do you figure that out? He suggests this really intense exercise. Visualize your own funeral.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. Imagine your loved ones are there. What do you genuinely hope they would say about you? About your character, your contributions, the kind of person you were? It cuts through all the superficial stuff we chase.
That really forces you to think about your core values, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And that clarity helps you create the main tool for this habit, your personal mission statement.
Yeah.
It's like your personal constitution defining what truly matters to you.
So once you have that why, that mission.
Then you need the how. How do you actually live it out day to day? That brings us to habit three. Put first things first. This is the execution habit.
This is where it gets practical, right? Managing your time.
Yes, but it's more than just time management. It's priority management. Covey gave us the famous time management matrix. You look at tasks based on two factors, urgency and importance.
Okay, I think I know this one. Four quadrants.
Exactly. Quadrant third is urgent and important crises, deadlines. Quadrant third is urgent but not important interruptions, some meetings, emails. Quadrant fourth is not urgent, not important time wasters.
And the sweet spot is?
Quadrant two. That's important, but not urgent. This is where the really effective stuff happens. Long-term planning, relationship building, exercise, learning new skills, preventing problems before they start.
But those things don't usually scream for attention, do they? The urgent stuff always seems louder.
That's the whole challenge. Quadrant two activities are easy to put off because they aren't urgent. We get addicted to the rush of quadrant the first or distracted by the noise of quadrant the third.
So habit three is about discipline.
It's the discipline fueled by habit two. Your mission tells you what's important to consciously carve out time for quadrant two. It means saying no to less important things, even if they feel urgent, so you can say yes to what truly matters long term. That discipline completes the private victory. You're now independent, principled, and organized.
Okay, so that's self-mastery sorted. But most of life involves other people. How do we move from that independence to working effectively with others, interdependence?
Great question. The bridge, according to Covey, is trust. And he uses this brilliant metaphor, the emotional bank account.
Like a real bank account, but for feelings.
Kind of. Every interaction you have with someone is either a deposit or a withdrawal. Deposits are things like keeping promises, being kind, listening well, apologizing sincerely. Withdrawals are things like breaking trust, being disrespectful, ignoring someone.
And a high balance means.
High trust.
Yeah.
Which is essential for the next habit, habit four. Think win-win.
Ah, win-win. Sounds nice, but is it always possible? Sometimes it feels like someone has to lose for me to win, especially in business.
Well, that feeling comes from what Covey calls the scarcity mentality, the belief that there's only so much pie to go around. If you get a big slice, there's less for me. It's a zero-sum game.
Okay.
Covey pushes us towards the abundance mentality, the belief that there's plenty out there for everyone. Success isn't finite. When you believe that, you can genuinely look for solutions where both parties benefit.
So you're not trying to beat the other person, but find a solution that works for both of you.
Exactly. And the highest expression of this is actually win-win or no deal. If you truly can't find a solution that benefits both sides, you agreeably walk away. You don't push for a win-lose just to get something. You preserve the relationship, the trust.
That takes maturity. And to even get to a win-win, you probably need to understand the other person really well.
Precisely. Which leads directly to habit 5. Seek first to understand, then to be understood.
This one sounds simple, but I bet it's incredibly hard in practice. We all want to jump in with our own opinions or advice.
Oh, absolutely. Our default mode is what Covey calls autobiographical listening. We listen through the filter of our own experience, ready to judge, advise, probe, or interpret based on our story.
Oh, you think that's bad? Let me tell you.
Exactly. Habit 5 is about shutting that down and practicing empathetic listening. Listening with the sole intent to deeply understand the other person's perspective, their feelings, their frame of reference. You diagnose thoroughly before you even think about prescribing a solution.
Really putting yourself in their shoes.
Truly. But and when you combine that deep understanding from Habit 5 with the win-win attitude from Habit 4, that's when you unlock Habit 6, synergize.
Synergy, that's like the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, it's 1 + 1 = 3 or 10 or 100.
Yeah.
It's creative cooperation at its best. It happens when people genuinely value their differences, different opinions, perspectives, backgrounds. Instead of seeing difference as a threat, you see it as an opportunity.
How so?
Because those differences allow you to create solutions together that neither person could have come up with alone. You're not just compromising. You're creating a third alternative that's better for everyone. That's the peak of interdependence.
Okay, that covers the private and public victories. 6 habits, but you mentioned a 7th.
Right, habit 7. Sharpen the saw. This is the habit of self-renewal. It makes all the others possible long-term.
Why sharpen the saw?
Covey uses the story of a woodcutter who's frantically sawing down a tree. Someone asks why he doesn't stop to sharpen his saw. He says, I'm too busy sawing.
Working harder, not smarter. Getting less done because the tool is dull.
Exactly. We do that to ourselves. We get so busy producing, working, achieving, that we neglect the production capability ourselves. This leads to burnout.
So sharpening the saw means taking care of yourself.
In 4 key areas, he says. Physical exercise, nutrition, rest. Spiritual connecting with your values, meditation, nature. Mental reading, learning, planning. And social-emotional building relationships, service, empathy. Habit 7 is about regularly investing time in all 4 areas to keep yourself sharp, effective, and balanced.
That PPC balance idea, production and production capability, feels like a really core theme running through the whole book.
It really is. It's the essence of effectiveness. Are you pushing for results so hard that you're destroying the asset, PC, whether that's your health, your relationships, your team's morale? Sustainable success requires balancing both. It's a constant question. Am I nurturing the goose that lays the golden eggs?
Yeah, that's powerful. Another theme that really stands out, maybe because it's countercultural, is the inside-out approach.
Absolutely. The idea that if you want things to change out there, better relationships, better job, the change has to start in here with your character, your motives, your paradigms.
It's so tempting to blame external factors or try to just manage perceptions.
Right. But Covey forces you to look inward first. Are my efforts to look good just hiding a weak foundation? The inside-out approach is about building that foundation first. It's tougher, but it's lasting.
And that ties into the abundance mentality too, doesn't it? That internal belief system?
Completely. It's the operating system for habits 4, 5, and 6. If you genuinely believe there's enough success, enough credit, enough good stuff to go around, you can collaborate, you can seek win-win, you can celebrate other successes.
Whereas scarcity thinking just breeds competition and defensiveness.
Exactly. It closes you off. Abundance opens up possibilities for synergy and true interdependence. It's fundamental.
You know, another thing Covey was brilliant at was coining these really sticky phrases, little lines that just nail the concept.
Oh, yeah. They're like mental shortcuts back to the core ideas. We should mention a few.
Definitely. The one that underpins habit 1 is huge. Between stimulus and response, there's a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. Just sums up personal freedom, doesn't it?
It really does. And then for habit 5, the communication one, most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. Woof. So true. If you just remember that, conversations change.
Totally. And for anyone drowning in tasks, the Habit 3 reminder, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. So simple, but so hard to do. It's that quadrant 2 focus.
It cuts right through the clutter. And maybe one more that captures the whole inside-out journey. Sow a thought, reap an action. Sow an action, reap a habit. sow a habit, reap a character, sow a character, reap a destiny. It shows how it all builds step by step.
Okay, this is all great philosophy, but how does someone listening actually like use this stuff tomorrow? Any practical takeaways?
Absolutely. Let's take time management, habit 3. Don't just make a random to-do list. Actually use the matrix. At the start of your week, schedule your quadrant 2 activities first. Block out time for planning, for exercise, for connecting with important people. Put those rocks in the jar before the sand of urgent stuff fills it up.
Good one. What about relationships?
Think about that emotional bank account. Make conscious deposits. Keep small promises. Offer sincere apologies quickly when you mess up. Listen without interrupting. It's not about grand gestures. It's the consistency of small, positive interactions that builds that deep trust needed for win-win.
Makes sense. And maybe one for work, for managers.
Yeah, the idea of stewardship delegation. It's from a case study in the book. Instead of telling people exactly how to do something micromanaging, you focus on the what. Define the desired results clearly, set guidelines, identify resources, establish accountability, and outline consequences. Then, let them figure out the method. It empowers people and frees you up.
So focusing on the outcome, not controlling every step.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Much more effective, much more motivating.
This has been, well, a really deep dive. Thinking back on it all, the thing that really struck me this time is the order of the habits. That you absolutely need that private victory habits 1, 2, 3 before you can have any real success in the public victory. With relationships and teamwork,
yeah.
You can't fake interdependence if you haven't mastered independence first.
Yeah, that sequence is critical. For me, the biggest takeaway is always that effectiveness isn't just a set of skills or techniques you learn. It's an outcome. It naturally flows from who you are, from having a character built on integrity and aligned with these timeless principles. The habits aren't just things to do. They're a way to be, a blueprint for a more purposeful life, really.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acontra Foundation.